And so, where are you right now?
I'm in Seattle.
Okay.
Nashville, yeah.
Nashville, yep.
I need to make it out there. It's been way, way too long.
Yeah, so it was before the pandemic that you were here?
Yeah, I funny enough, I like told myself like I visited 2016, 2017 is probably the last time I was there. I was like, "Oh, I'm moving here." And then I just never did.
That's fine.
Anticlimactic story.
That is a long time, but I get it. I get it. I went to I mean, I'm sure we'll get into this later, but like I went to LA for a little bit and then was gonna move and then the pandemic hit and I was like, you know, maybe I'm gonna stay here and then I, you know, met a girl and you know, we're engaged and you know, and it's like, hey,
Oh, yeah, blade,
there we go.
congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. So, you know, everything worked out the way it was supposed to.
Welcome to Made for Music, brought to you by Stitch Records. I am your host, Duncan Bayerjean. This podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive picture of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is, and sign up for the newsletter at madeformusicpodcast.com to be the first to hear about all the latest updates and insights into the ever-evolving music business. As I mentioned, this podcast is brought to you by Stitch Records. Many of you know Cross Stitch, aka Aaron Carstensen, the founder of Stitch Records. He's produced and mixed every song I've released as DB Stewart. He has a background in sound design for Berklee College of Music, and there is no one else I would trust more to deliver the best sounding mixes than him. The fastest way to get a hold of him is on Instagram under the handle @XStitchMusic, all one word. But without further ado, we've got an amazing guest for you today, so hang on tight for the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast has an intimate relationship with music, dating all the way back to when he was 9 years old, escaping into his Yamaha keyboard to drown out the chaos of life. However, it was a GarageBand class from Ryan Tedder that sparked his love for writing and producing music, and after high school, moved to Nashville to attend Belmont for songwriting, followed by a stint in LA working in artist management until he returned to Nashville in 2018, stepping out as a solo artist, inspired by the likes of the Beatles, emo Bruno Mars, OneRepublic, and Lauv. He's absolutely on fire right now, releasing new music every 2 weeks with his next single, Daisies, a collaboration with Jack the Underdog, dropping this Friday, October 13th. So without further ado, please welcome the man following the path set out by John Bellion and Ryan Tedder and blazing his own trail through the pop world in Nashville, pop songwriter, producer, and artist extraordinaire, Corey Shore.
Oh my gosh, that was so good. Thank you so much. So tell me more about Made for Music though, while I'm waiting for this to open. So it's when did it start? Is it all yours? Is there a team? What was that like? Why did you say, you know, I'm gonna do this?
Yeah, are you familiar with the podcast And the Writer Is?
Love and the Writer Is,
Yes,
yes.
I've always loved the business side of things, and so many of my friends, especially in the local scene, just never tapped in to what they needed to do or didn't. Or a lot of friends wanted to work in music, but just thought you have to either be like an artist and that was it, and didn't understand what
Right.
the ecosystem looked like. So after listening to And the Writer Is and getting to hear the how and why behind so many different facets of songwriting and publishing, I was like, oh,
Yes.
I want to kind of democratize access to this information, but not just in the songwriting and publishing side. How do we do this for, like, paint a comprehensive picture of the scene, if you will? So started recording 6 years ago. Yes, this is the fifth season, so, or actually almost 7 years ago, December 7 years ago.
Sweet.
And yeah, fully own it, do everything on my own. Sorry, verbose answer to your question, which was basically wanted to paint a comprehensive view of the business side and artistry.
Yes.
And it's been going about, like, yes, a little over 6 years now.
Wow. Dude, that's amazing.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it is a crazy I feel it is a crazy industry because like I feel to make it, you have to like it's there's so many there's so many bits and pieces and angles and elements that need to come together. And I think in this day and age, especially, I think in the 80s, like when my dad was doing it, you could kind of be the rock star,
right?
And kind of just be the talent and like, oh, what are taxes? Right. Like you don't need to know how to be a human because you're just talented and someone else will be a human for you. And I just don't think, I mean, even seeing my friends who are indie, but they're super successful and they're still indie. Sometimes by choice, like they'll get a deal and they'll like, either like, well, you know, I don't either for whatever reason. Like I have some friends who are very like, they love Nashville and they're just like, and they're in pop like me, but they're just like, I don't want to move to LA. And if I sign, I have to, and I don't want to, and I'm doing fine and I'll figure it out. Like, so, and they're doing great. They're all of them though. I mean, talent aside, and they have to be, you have to be skilled, obviously. But that aside, with that being said, they're also super business minded. Like you meet them and they're very, you know, I mean, if you met them and you did not know that they did music, you would probably assume they're just kind of, they own a business. Like,
right.
You know, that's the energy. You know, it's like,
it so much is like, everyone's an entrepreneur now. You have to, like, the artists have to be entrepreneurs, and those that aren't, let's say you get the deal, it's like, it's not like you said, it's not like it used to be, which is the talent, the label comes in and they really were that like full services agency in a lot of ways, as well as the capital. Now right. A lot of it is, great, we have capital, but we still need you to go create the short form content, and you got to do that now. It's like, okay, what happened to the,
yeah, so what are you doing for me? They're like, well, we have money. And I'm like, oh, you guys do have money.
Yeah,
you guys have a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and you have a lot of it. They're like, what are we going to do with all this money?
But it really is like a VC deal now. It's like, okay, you've got a venture capitalist and you're still just an entrepreneur and you got to keep grinding, and they can give you the money to do it, but you got to keep doing it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And from what I've seen, a lot of it is you have to, it's almost not as venture capitalist as it would have been, I feel like, where it's almost like, hey, like, oh, are you popping off now? Is the money coming in already? Have you basically found the way to, have you already broken through enough? You know, and then they can come in and kind of like level up, you know, accentuate, you know, what you've already done, what you've already got, right? They'll magnify that. That was the word I was looking for. But like, yeah, they'll magnify that, you know, to a higher level, but you have to like get the team and do the, you know, and it takes time. I mean, as you know, it takes a lot. I mean, it takes a lot. I've been in Nashville for 9 years with the stint in LA in between there, but like, you know, most of it was Nashville, and then I've been really grinding. Started as like a songwriter in 2016, just a songwriter. I was like, I'm just gonna like write for other artists, and was doing that. And because I think I get bored easy, I was like, okay, well, like, not that, like, that, like, that, that's never, you never stop learning how to write better songs. Do you snowboard or ski?
I have not in a long time, but very familiar, used to. But
it's like, man, you're West Coast? Come on. Like,
so
many mountains.
My mom
out
wanted that so bad. She wanted us to be campers and snowboarders and skiers, and did not work out. We ended up doing like travel sports, and
that's okay.
Gave up on the mountains. I know you're a big snow.
I'm a huge boarder. I was like, oh, man. Well, it's like I always say, like, skiing, easy to start, and like very hard to master. Snowboarding, very hard to start, but in my opinion, pretty quick to master, because it's kind of like one board, it's the same motion over and over and over again. You kind of get the gist, but starting is like is a learning curve. And I look at like songwriting is kind of like skiing, right? Like, you kind of just, like, there's very few things you need to know to be a hit writer. Like, to know, like, on the level of, like, on the analytical level, songwriting is song structure, right? Like, and then melody and lyric, right? And then there's like some lyric tools, like internal, external lyric. There's some, this is just like BS if you don't care about this, but it's interesting, you know. But like, it's like very few things. There's like lyric, some melody stuff, and there's some tricks. Static melodies, jumpy melodies, scalic melodies, right? And then you just know how to, like, toggle between them, change it up, right? Like, but mastering that, that's the thing that takes, like, a lifetime, right?
Right.
But, like, you can get it, right? Like, I can sit a 5-year-old down and say, songs have verses and choruses. And then there's this thing, you know, 2/3 of the way through called a bridge. And then it does a chorus. And like the 5-year-old will get that, right? Because it's like super simple. But then mastering it, right? But so I was like doing the songwriting thing and like nowhere near mastery. But I'm a very like, I like learning new things and I like analyzing things. Like that process is exciting for me. And I was like, well, I've already analyzed and learned what I've needed to have, you know, what I need to like keep growing in songwriting, but there's nothing new to like analyze. Like there's, you know what I mean? There's no macro thing. So then I was like, I'm going to learn production because I knew that would just be an endless hole of,
yeah,
of
for
crap.
Real
you know, it's just an endless hole of just like, and it still is. Because it's technology, which is, so it's just like, I was like, this is going to be the thing that's going to sit like satiate that, like, you know, whatever, like I'm bored. Well, there's always something in production to learn, you know, there's always a new instrument to learn how to play. There's always a new synth to like, there's always a new thing. So it's like that I roped that in like 2017, 2016 writing, 2017 started producing. Started making demos with all my friends that I was writing for and writing with and becoming what we call like the track guy in the room, which is like a term or phrase that, you know, you have a writing room and a lot of times there'll be like 3 writers. There'll be the artist, the songwriter, and then like a track guy. A track guy is like the dude who's like, you know, at the desk and he's making the track while they're writing. So he kind of supplies the vibe, you know. And so I started doing that and learning how to produce and slowly kind of grew that. And then I went to LA, kept on doing that in LA, working with more people. I worked in management. That was like what made me money in LA was I was working under a management firm and realized I never wanted to manage ever, like artists manage. Like that was absolute hell. But I learned a lot, so I'm thankful for it. You know, and then I basically just right, I'm like super on a tangent, but we're gonna roll with it. Then I was basically just like, you know, writing with this artist, but we were writing from my story, but I wasn't an artist yet. So I was like, we're writing from my, it was my story for her, song for her. We wrote the song and it just felt like it really needed a, like a duet. And I said that in the write, and I wasn't like, it needs a duet, so like, you know, it wasn't that
look
at
here.
All. I was so not an artist, so not in my mind at all. I was so like, no, I'm a writer, I'm a producer, I'm not an artist. And I can get to why I was so strong in that later, but I was at the time, I was like, no, I'm not an artist. She was like, well, just like hop on the demo. You should just hop on the demo. And so I did like one take. Literally. And then we played it back. The song was called Hurts More. Never came out or anything, but I really did like the song. And Palmer was the track guy. Palmer, who's like one of my main co-producers, Palmer Hooks, still to this day. And he was my roommate in LA. But he plays the song. And it sounded great. like I sounded good. Like I was just like, you know, when you listen back and you're like, wait, that sounds good. And it felt, I think more importantly, it felt good because I was so like, I haven't, like, I love singing, but I would sing, of course, but I haven't like really done it in years at that point. And I did it and I was like, wow, that felt so cathartic. And so Palmer, who was my roommate at the time, we moved back to Nashville and I was like, I phoned him up on the move, on the drive back, and I was like, hey, do you want to like make an album for me? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And so we just, that's what we did. That was 2019. So
that's been sick.
Yeah, dude, just been very long way of saying I get bored easy and you know, started taking music seriously in 2016 as a writer, 2017 as a producer, and then 2019 as an artist, and then I've been doing, you know, the thing since.
That's awesome. And that's really interesting to have that experience on the management side. I know you said you didn't love it, but that's got to be helpful, at least being on that side of the table.
Yes. I was very lucky because I was introduced to this guy named Tim. His name is Tim Byrne, and he owns a management company called Fandom with a D, Fandom Management. And before starting that company, he was at Psycho with Simon Cowell. He's British. I mean, like, they're all, it's a British company.
Mm-hmm.
But he lives in LA, but it's a British company. And he was like, he's like the guy, you know, he's the guy. He's the guy that every label goes to still to like put together the super group. He put together One Direction. He put together Fifth Harmony. He, like, when I was with him, we were looking at putting together like another super group for like really like classical, like it's like was a pop opera group.
Interesting.
And yeah, it was like a whole, you know, which was like for Decca, which is like a classical label. But he's like the guy, you know, for super groups. And he also manages like these other pop artists all over the world, and he still has his hands in pop management too. So I kind of got to see the film and TV / music industry side of going out on the internet and, like, I mean, deep dive scouring. I think we got to 2,000 names to whittle down into 4. Right. And I'm not exaggerating. I mean, I wasn't the only one who was on. It was like me and 3 other people. It was like a very small team to get, basically, like, to look at all of these singers, and they had to have the right look, and they all had to look different and be from different parts of the world, right? So, I mean, it was the whole, it was so, everything you've heard about big music industry, TV and film, it's like that, you know, which is uncomfy for sure. But you know, yeah, you know,
well, yeah, he's sitting there going, how do I make a group have international appeal on day one?
Well, yeah, and it has to hit, and you have to have, it was an all-male group, so it had to, like, every guy had to have, like, a vibe that would, like, this is the bad boy. You know, like they all had to have a, you know, like, a character trait, like, a character, you know? This is the bad boy, this is the nice guy, like, guy next door, you know, cute, whatever. You know, he loves his mom. You know, like... It's like every, and it all had, and they all had to be from different, it was like a whole, there was all of this criteria on top of the fact that they had to be good at music, like, right, which is like, it was like crazy, and be reachable, right, and be able to take on an opportunity like that in a place, like, there's just so much that has to come together for those kinds of groups to happen. But I learned a lot about the backside too, like, I did a lot of marketing material. For more, like, business to business pitching, you know, I'd take you and build you a deck, and, you know, basically a thing where it's multiple. I feel like I already know, you know, I'm saying this more for listeners. You know what I mean? But, like,
for sure.
You know what I mean? But like building like a deck, you know, and the deck will say, you know, like, Duncan, you know, has these numbers, and the deck will visually look appealing and be your vibe with your colors and show you like your clothing, and, you know, and have links in it. So the PDF is linkable to your music and whatever. And just basically boast you as like the perfect, you need this guy. He's ready for the world to see him now, you know? So like sign him, like jump on this basically. Right. So that's all helpful. That was definitely all very, like, helpful to see and look at and study just how Tim thinks. Because the dude is so, I think he's, personally, like, I think he's brilliant. He really is a brilliant guy. And so just, like, studying kind of, like, being around that and just being like, wow, like, for creatives especially, you cannot take personally someone not responding to you, not getting back to you, or just saying no. I mean, especially at higher levels. Like, he is high level, right? So, I mean, I would send him a guy. He would sometimes pull up a picture. Nope. Didn't even listen. Just not the right vibe. Just not it. Not what he was. He has the vision, and it's not him. Next. Mm-hmm. It's not like, well, it could be, or he doesn't have time for that. Nope. I mean, the no happened so fast, right? Maybe. Okay, let's get him on an interview. Nope. No, I mean, it is so immediate. And it's not personal. I mean, it's really not. Like yeah, I was just watching him
business,
do that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, and like, we were going through 2,000 people. So like, I get it, right? Like, I get it now because I was on the side, I was in the chair of having to go through 2,000 people. But when you're one of the 2,000, you're like, well, what? Just tell me what I need to do, man. I'll do it. It's like, they literally don't have time. They don't have time.
You're talking about he's got the vision. And then if you flip the script and you've got your own artistic vision or something like that, and someone was to walk up to you and say, yeah, no, go to this over here, you'd be sitting there like, that's not what's going on here. You'd have that same gut reaction of, no, that's not what I'm doing. That's not my
exactly.
vision.
Exactly.
Conversely, the guy on the business side is going, I've got a product I'm trying to create. I know the ingredients. I know what needs to be done. That's not it. Therefore, let's keep it moving.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it kind of, you know, I think about the, I don't know why this one Drake lyric keeps coming in my brain, like randomly throughout my life, but he's like, I don't got time for somebody whose time is coming, is like a Drake lyric, you know?
Oh, I didn't know that one.
It's a great Drake lyric. I'm censoring it, obviously, but basically that's the Drake lyric is like, you know, I don't got time for somebody whose time is coming. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, yeah, you're Drake. You don't have time for somebody whose time
right.
is coming. Like, but on the flip side of that coin, there's the mentors in the music industry that are important to find. And generally, from my experience, they are the people who are what I would call like, they're like pseudo retired, you know, they're not like Tim is going right. He's doing the thing right now. But you know, those 70-year-olds, they're retired, but they have time and they're not on that grind. They don't need to do that. They don't want to do that. They've proven themselves. And they're out there where they really do genuinely get good fulfillment if when they find someone who A is willing to do the work and is consistent and sticks around.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, just like living in Nashville. I mean, okay, let me rewind. Going to school in Nashville. For music, freshman year, day one, everyone is like gung-ho. Everyone is like, this is it for me. I know you know. Like, yeah, I can tell you're nodding. You're like, yep. Yep. Everyone is so, everyone's like, this is it for me. I couldn't imagine doing anything else with my life. It's going to be music. That's it. That's it. I can't do anything. Can't imagine anything else. Literally 95% of those people, that was less than a decade ago, have quit. Like, literally, I am 26, right? So we're like, I'm young. I consider myself to be very young still. Like, that's crazy. I'm sure another of the ones that are in, another 90% will quit at 30. Once 30 hits, they're going to have their crisis, their 30-year-old crisis, right? And like, Shane McAnally made it at 35.
Mm-hmm.
What if he quit at 34?
Yeah, that's real. It's so interesting you say that because I went to University of Oregon, didn't have huge music ties, obviously the university itself, but they had a stat too, which I thought was really eye-opening and is a whole separate conversation, could be higher ed and in the music business, but
for sure.
Their stat was, it was like 90% of the folks in the music department, any of the creative arts at Oregon within 18 months are going to be out of the practice and onto a different career. And they were trying to play it off as, oh, that's why you need to go to career fairs and get transferable skills. And I was sitting there going like, oh, well, there's so much there. And kind of,
there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, that's a whole nother podcast. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the crux of why I did this was like, there's a lot of resources that just aren't made available. I had a friend that majored in songwriting, didn't know what music publishing was by the time they graduated. All they had done was focus on songwriting craft. And I was like, you mean you don't even know how to make money off songwriting?
That's crazy.
And you got a 4-year degree and you don't know what music publishing is? Like, that's just a huge issue. Again,
big,
whole separate thing, but
yes.
Like, big problem.
Big, huge. I mean, and because at the end of the day, all that doing music, like, I'm a full-time producer. That's what makes me money. Like what makes me money is I do production. I, you know, and so that's a business, right? Like, I like, and all that, the only reason why I can say I'm full-time is because I make enough money. Not, I am not living it up, but like, I make enough money to survive, right? And keep doing it. That's it. That's when, and I, John Mayer, there was like a thing that went around on either Instagram Reels or TikTok, but it was like a John Mayer quote, young John Mayer doing a speech at a university. Basically, I think it was to Berkeley, which would make sense because he's John Mayer. Boston Berkeley, obviously. And he was saying something to the effect of, yay, there we go. Something to the effect of, you know, we, like he's, for all those artists out there, you have to have a goal, right? Because don't just say, like, I need to make it. It's like, what does that mean? Like, what is that? Like, what does that mean? Like, does that mean, you know, I'm going to sell 100,000 units of my record? Like, what is that? Because if you just say I'm going to make it, sick. Sick, bro. Like, you're just going to, like, what does that mean? Like, you know, it's like boiling it down. Like, I had to, I had to sit down. And it took me hours. But I, like, when I started this, like, the production stuff and, like, really, like, being like, I'm going to do this, right? I'm going to do this. This is, like, a leg of what I'm doing. And then I have my artistry and I'm building it into my artistry, too. And thinking about, you have to crunch numbers, right? Like, I know exactly to the, I'm not even kidding. I know to the cent how much, if I buy nothing in a day, how much I'm spending for living costs. To the cent. I know exactly how much today cost me if I bought nothing. And then you add on, well, I normally buy a coffee in the morning, and that's nowadays like $9, you know? So it's like, you know, it's like you start adding that up. You go, oh, a $9 coffee like every day for 30 days, right? You're adding, that's like almost, that's like what, 290 bucks, 270? Yeah, it's like 270 bucks extra a month you're spending on coffee, right? So you gotta, you factor that in. But my point is, like, approaching it like that, I think, is really smart. And that would be crazy if I majored. I did major in songwriting, but I'm lucky that my school taught me some stuff about the business. And I mean, I definitely took it and ran with it. I didn't just sit. I didn't just show up to class. I was very like, I gotta, you know, grab coffee with everyone I can and, you know, and intern and work at places and learn different things and see what I like doing too, you know? Like, who do I like working with? You're like, who do I not like working with? Not because there's something wrong with them, just like people work better with different types of people, right? Like, you know, it's like, it's a, you know, and knowing, you know, again, I'm like 9 years into this. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of what is the Nashville thing. They always say even Nashville in general is harder to pop. It's like the 10
year city. So, come on, I'm on my 10th year. Let's go.
Like, hey, here we go.
We're right here. We are right there. Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. But to what you said, 100%. Like, you have to know. And I think it's really cool that Made for Music and like what you're doing with Made for Music is working to bring that education down to a ground level.
Conversations like this that get me fired up though too, in like the best of ways. Like, it's great hearing you get to talk about your experience. And I'm actually really curious, you mentioned being able to network around, and I'm curious what it was like being in Nashville. You mentioned the detour to LA and whatnot. When you were in school, were you thinking like, okay, I'm sticking to Nashville and doing this circuit here? Or do you mind walking me through that?
Yeah, I was like, honestly, I was going to drop out of Belmont, like my sophomore year. I was like, yeah, I get it. Like, I get college, like I'm going to drop out. My mom, is super traditional. And she was like, absolutely not. And I didn't have enough agency yet as a human to be like, oh, well, whatever, mom, I'm going to do my own thing anyways. Like, you know, I just, that wasn't in me yet.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot more character growth to go through, but so I was like, fine, I'll stay. Going into my junior year though, I was definitely, because I'm very pop, and when I moved to Nashville in 2015, the pop scene here creatively was super small.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about, yeah, sorry, continue.
No, kind of, yeah,
as far as mainstream roadmap goes, just kind of popped in my head. No, yes, like, oh wow, okay, so getting yes. excited. Sorry, I didn't yes. mean to interrupt you.
No, like, no. Oh, wow. No, interrupt as much as you want. No, you're good. it was so small. I mean, it was like me, this artist, Katie Mack, Danny G, who's now in LA as an influencer on TikTok, right? Like, we would all write together, and then Will McBeth, who's like amazing producer, moved into town, and some other producers started moving in, and like Phil Barnes started growing, who's also a great producer, and like these are all non-country. I'm mentioning non-country pop leaning right. producers, right? So like there's like throughout these years, and then there were people moving slowly but surely on the creative side. Then Prescription Songs, which is Dr. Luke's publishing company, started a branch in Nashville, pop only, like a pop, you know, because it's a pop publishing company. So that was big. That was a big win. And then you started seeing like they don't exist anymore now. Like Prescription exists, but what I'm about to mention doesn't exist. But we had Pop Squad, Housequake, all of these promoters and show promoters who were non-country basically. We're gonna only do pop, R&B, rap, no country. I mean they don't exist anymore. There's other ones now that have kind of filled that gap. You know, and Tons, the other Nashville society, where there's, you know, they're a group that hosts events that are the other Nashville society, non-country events. Katie Fagan's on that group. Katie Fagan is with Prescription, right? So it all ties. It's all, you know, I mean, the difference between Nashville pop community and LA pop community, having lived in both, is LA pop community is the world stage for pop, right? So if you make it to the top of the LA pop community, you are at the top of the world in pop.
Right.
Just like how if you make it to the top of the country community in Nashville, you are in the top of the world for country, right? The world will see you. It's the world stage for country. LA is the world stage for pop. However, good luck in LA if you don't know people. Honestly, like, good mm-hmm. luck. There's millions of people there. But there's millions of people there. So you will find your, like, stay there long enough, you're going to find your crew, you're going to find people you click with. There's a million pop bubbles, right? And you can kind of just bounce between them and figure out who you work best with and who's your vibe. And it's a lot more colorful mm-hmm. in terms of what you have, what you can do creatively. And there's infrastructure there. And you do have the connections. Like you know, you have that, if you live there, you have that, you know, shopping at the Melrose, bump into so-and-so who works at Sony, who happens to be looking for a new pop artist, right? You have that chance meeting thing that can happen there in the pop world that probably won't happen in Nashville, right? On the flip side, you have the smallest pop community in Nashville. So like it is very easy to just start to be a part of the community because like, it is, I mean, it's bigger now, but it is still so small that you play enough gigs in a year and everyone at least has seen you perform,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy. Like that just doesn't happen in a big city, you know? Was that what you asked? I don't even know. I think that's what you asked. Like,
I was just curious.
You got
about
excited
that
about like, Yeah, you got excited about the journey. Oh my gosh, I got so sidetracked.
No, that was beautiful though, and that was really because I think of when you were talking about, you know, of course, LA being the pinnacle of pop. I think of like BB Rexx and Florida Georgia Line in that pop country avenue or bridge that was built between LA and Nashville for a bit there. And so when you mentioned kind of that 2016 time, I was like, oh, that's right. When there started to be a little bit of back and forth, a little bit of migration of pop on over and really the blending of pop and country.
Yes.
In a really big way.
And it's still a thing, right? Like, there's a lot of pop publishers. I'm sorry. There's a lot of country publishers that now kind of raise their eyebrows if you're a pop writer, but you're down to write country. Because they are like, oh, well, pop, like, because country, like, pop country is, like, sometimes, honestly, literally just pop music with a twang. Like, it's, right, like, not even country, right? So, for that for that side of country, they need pop writers. They can't have that 6-year-old, you know, country, you know, deep roots Texas guy who can write, you know, like a party song and like party, P-A-R-D-I, you know, like, you know, like not party, you know, you know, or like they can't, like, you know, they have the Brad Paisley writers who, you know, have kids and wives and stuff, but like they need that 16-year-old, 24-year-old, you know, pop person who can sing triplets, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, like, I don't know, and just be like, you know, because that's like crazy, you know what I mean? Like, and, but it is, but like in that genre, that would be crazy, right? So it's all perspective. But you know, being in pure pop in Nashville is still it's an interesting animal, you know, it's an interesting beast to be a part of, you know,
for sure. And based on like your influences and such, that's what's so interesting to me as well, because you really have that like John Bellion and Ryan Tedder blueprint,
yes,
that you're following.
Huge.
In the Nashville scene. And but it made a lot of sense to me when you were talking about being able to kind of ingratiate yourself in what would be like a smaller community in Nashville, though, and really be in and own that space.
Yes.
Which is really cool.
It's funny because you work with enough people and for long enough, you kind of see trends, right? So if you are in sessions with a lot of, you know, female pop versus male pop, there's always an artist, like, usually ask for reference tracks. Hey, we're about to start a session to write for them, right? And you go, hey, like, send me some references. Like, what's your vibe? Like, just to get an idea of the vibe. Like, what are we even going to write today? You know, right now it's Olivia Rodrigo.
Right.
Everyone,
yeah,
wants to sound like Olivia Rodrigo, right? But in 2017 and 2018, it was Ariana Grande. Everyone wanted that dark pop Ariana Grande thing, right? And then for male pop, it's like John Bellion. So I'm like one of my, everyone's like, I just want to be like John Bellion. If they're folkier, it's John Mayer. Like, it's all the Johns. You know, it's just like, it's funny to see. But yes, I'm in the John Mayer, sorry, I'm not in the John Mayer, I'm in the John Bellion crew, I guess, of male pop artists who love John Bellion, like a lot. And Ryan Tedder and all things One Republic, because that was like my childhood. That was like my band in childhood. I was like, I love these guys. They're so good. You know,
not a bad blueprint to follow. I mean, but he's got to be like one of the most decorated songwriters. I mean, the band itself, obviously huge.
Yes.
And then finding out that he's orchestrated
everything.
Yeah. Fair to say.
I mean, yeah, everything. He has Greedy right now, like literally with Tay McRae. Like he literally, like, he's so good. Like, that song is so good.
I'm really curious how that's informed your approach, because you mentioned you're in like in this pop bubble, and then what's exciting is the track dropping Friday the 13th. You're kind of doing his thing. You kind of get this genre metamorphosis, if you will.
100%
for Jack the Underdog, which again, like, one of your heroes really can jump genres. So
100%.
Was it a decision of, okay, I'm gonna go do this rock song, or did it just kind of come to fruition, like, oh shoot, I guess I have begun a song that's taken me in a whole new direction here after so much time?
Yeah, I'm very with that song, like, the way I write, I'm gonna start with the way I write, because I feel like it makes sense in that context, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we had more time, I would even screen share and literally write something right now. Literally. But like, it's,
ooh, that'd be fun.
We could do it. You let
Sidebar
me know.
Sidebar sesh.
Yes, we could do that, actually. Let me know. We'll reschedule it. Like,
that'd,
I'll
be sick. That'd actually be a pretty cool, like,
we should do it. Let's just do it. We'll chat, because I would love to do that. Like, it would, you know, it would not, I'm a very flow based writer, so I'm never, and I'm not like, ooh, I can't. That would just be fun to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was just like a light bulb that went off my brain of, that would be a really cool. Yeah, well, let's definitely chat about that, because there's already like, yeah, that would be sick.
Yeah, we'll connect. We'll connect. Yeah. We can just co-write it too. We can just throw ideas up and be like, okay, cool. So Daisies, I started writing. I like to start with the chorus, and in my head, I knew I wanted to do like a bum bum, like, you know, We Will Rock You rhythm, bum bum ka, bum bum ka, big song. And I pulled out my guitar, which is behind me, but not the acoustic, the electric, obviously. And I was like, pushing up daisies. But I had like the, so I played those chords, and I was like, I like these chords. I was like just on the guitar and singing, and I came up with the da 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 da. And I was playing power chords. I think that's what did it for me, because I was like, oh, well, power chords. And I just laid it down. Like, I'm not questioning it. And I also, when I'm writing, I really try my best to never get in my way. So if a song wants to be rock, it's going to be rock. Like, I'm not like, oh, I'm a pop artist, so I don't do that. It's just, no. Like, if it's going to... I have done this enough times for long enough to realize that when you a song will tell you exactly what it wants to be if you let it. You just got to listen.
Ooh, right? I love that.
You just got to listen. It's because we're in music. It's a listening. It's an art of listening. Like, it's literally what we do. So, you know, I was playing it. And I was like, okay, it's going this direction. And put in, you know, pushing up daisies, you want to answer my calls, lay those bum, 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 bum power chords. Found this, like, it was wrong, but it was right enough. I found this, like, crazy blast beat loop that someone was playing, dragged that in the session, and, like, spliced it up, completely chopped it up and basically completely made it a new drum beat. But that was the drum. That's like the crazy. It's like a crazy blast beat double time thing. And the song kind of grew from there. And a lot of times when I'm writing, I was like, again, it's a listening art, but it's like sometimes I have a lyric guide. Sometimes I'm really feeling stuff when I write, and I go, I have to write about this thing that I'm feeling, right? But this is my job. And a lot of times you don't feel like doing your job, you show up and you see what happens, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a day where I was like, I knew I wanted to write. I wanted to write a bum, 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 but I didn't know emotionally what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm.
But once I had the guitar and I had the drum beat, that groove, I was like, well, this kind of feels like anger. I was like, who have I been angry at? And I was like, that one ex. We all have that one ex, right? Like, that one ex.
Gotta go back to the well.
Yeah. Exactly. That one ex that it's like we have exes, but they're like good people, and like it ended like fine. It was sad, but like they're good. We wish them well. And then there's that one ex, right? So it's like that one ex. And I was like, so that's what it's about. And I started writing that chorus, and the song kind of became, as you know now, because you've listened to it, and as you guys will on October 13th, Friday the 13th, which isn't that crazy? Friday the 13th is in October.
Yeah, it was too fitting.
It was like, I was
clearing
like
my schedule. I've been like, I'm staying home that
yeah.
day. Like,
yeah.
I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. Yeah, like, struts all the blinds, just sits in bed all day.
I had someone else to hang out, and I haven't seen them in a while. I was like, honestly, we haven't had luck connecting. Friday the 13th is not the day I want to. Like,
yeah.
We can go Thursday or Saturday.
Yeah, it's like a meteor is going to hit. It's going to hit us or something. It can't happen. Yeah. It's crazy. It's so funny. It's so good. And so with Daisies, started writing that, came up with the idea of like the pushing up daisies, you won't even answer my call. That's the thing I spend the most time writing the chorus and the chorus lyric first, because I need to know like what am I gonna say, like what's the point of the song. And I remember Ryan Tedder on an interview saying that he once spent 3 days writing a chorus, and I was like, yo, if he can spend 3 days to write a chorus, I can spend like as much time as I want, you know, like, yeah, if, yeah. You know, to figure out a chorus, right? Like, mm-hmm. to figure out the right chorus. So I did that, and then as I kind of started building elements, because again, it's a listening art. You add something and then your brain hears something else out of that thing, right? It's almost like you're collaborating with the song you're writing. That's the best part about writing, is it's not just, even if you're alone in a room, you're collaborating with the piece. It's active. It's alive with you. And so you hear a thing and I was like, oh, it could be kind of hyperpop. It should be kind of hyperpop too, you know? And that was that. And there was this one drum fill sample that I got that was like this, like, ba-dum, but like, how do I do it? It's like ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. Like that's the rhythm. Ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka. And it wasn't slowing down, but it really wanted to. And it was the thing that I threw at the end of the chorus. So it's like, but to cut, to cut, to cut, to cut, to cut. Sorry, let me actually make sense with my what with my beatbox. It's like, put to cut, to cut, to cut, to cut, to cut, 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 cut. And I wanted that cut, cut, cut to really like go cut, 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 cut. Like slow down,
stumble through the end,
and stumble. Yeah, I wanted to. Yeah, exactly. Like to trip. And so I was like, okay, we're at the end of the chorus. Let's just slow the track down. Let's just do a tempo change. Why not? And so I did. And it was dope. It was great. Oh, it was dope.
I get in debates with my producer all the, I shouldn't say debates. I love tempo changes. And he's sitting there going, why did you do it again? I have like one son that has like 3 or 4. and he's working at Ableton too. We were doing sections and we were cut. And understandably, his frustration was I decided, oh, let's rearrange the song. And he was like, dude, like I've got to go like do all the automation over again because of all the bonkers stuff we're doing. But you as a producer doing that just gave me life for the next 10 years with him.
Yes, like, good.
You know what?
Good. Yes. It's worth it. It's worth it. Because the thing is I look at, you know, in music, this is an offshoot side note, but like in the music industry on the creative field, we have 3 roles, right? We have artists, writers, and producers, right? Obviously, everyone kind of does all 3 usually to some degree, right? They might dedicate all their time toward one, but most songwriters know some about production. Most artists can get a demo together, like or can cut their vote. Like everyone does a little bit of all of it, right? And at the end of the day, if you're a producer or you're a writer or you're an artist, like we're all artists, right? So even if you're a writer, you're an artist. You're still an artist. And the best writers know, can understand, oh, my job isn't simply to be the machine to write through someone else's soul. It's to add to it because I'm also an artist, right? I have creative ideas. I can do this. I'm an artist. Producers who are great producers are artists. 100%. You think Timbaland is not an artist? You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, right? Like, he's absolutely right. Just because he's not, I mean, he has released stuff, obviously, but just because he's not on the same Justin Bieber release schedule doesn't mean that he's not just as much of an art. Or I'll do you better, like Greg Wells. You don't think Greg Wells is an artist? He's totally an artist. Yeah. You know, like, side note, back to Daisies, slow it down, right? With that ka-ka-ka-ka-ka, with that collaboration I was talking about. I heard the sample, I was like, this needs to slow down, so I slow it down. And that was Bridge. And because of the tempo I slowed it down to, it slows down to this, like, we're at Daisies is at, can you hear this, by the way, if I do this?
Yeah.
Cool. So Daisies, the chorus, that's a tempo. Slows down to, oh, it goes to, yeah, that's where it slows. That tempo to me, headbanger tempo. Like, cut up, right? And I was like, okay, this section needs to just be so heavy. Just heavy, right? That's what I want. I just want it to be so heavy. Because again, the tempo is like, it needs to do that. That's telling me, make me heavy. I'm gonna make you heavy. So that was that. And then slow speed back up back to the chorus to get us back. Right. And
I love it.
That's what we did. Right. So that's what that was. So the demo that I produced up. And so the song was before I got it to Jack, the underdog, who I've known, I mean, for 7 years or 8 years at this point, cause we met in school. Like the song was a chorus. It was, the structure was chorus, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. I show it to my team. I'm listening to it. It's so in my catalog, so rock. I mean, it has the hyper pop thing that I do that I love. I don't exclusively do hyper pop, but it's a thing. But I had that. But it was so rock. And my team was like, hey, it's so rock. And I was like, I know. You're but like, I love
isn't
it.
Isn't that sick?
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it sick? Yeah. Right. Exactly. And they're like, it's so rock. It's so Corey in that it has like the slowdown into a bridge. Like it has that. I like being experimental in a way that's tasteful, you know, where you listen to it and it sound like. It sounds like music. You know what I mean? Like some people are like, I do experimental, and I'm like, I hope what you mean is it's just dope. Like,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that's what I'm hoping. That's what you're telling me, right? Like, I hope that's what you mean when I hear.
I need that on a poster in here of like, if you say experimental, I hope you mean it's dope.
I hope you just mean like it's that, super dope. Yeah, because I mean, in pop, and the reason why I do pop music is because pop as a genre is all about do what you want. So long as it's dope, that's it. Just make it be like, make it dope. That's, I don't care. Like the structure doesn't matter. JVKE Jake, right? Jake with a V. I mean, his structure is whack like all the time and it doesn't matter because it's dope. Like if you do it, make it dope. Don't, you know, make it make sense basically is what I'm saying. But it has these elements that are very Corey. But it sounds like a rock song. And I was like, immediately I was like, we fixed that by bringing on a rock artist. And I was like, and I know just the guy. And I like, immediately in front of them, I was like, you know what? Before I forget, I'm going to text him right now. And I literally am like, texted Jack. I'm like, yo, no pressure either way. This is the demo of a song that I would love to have you on. If you don't mess with it, no worries. And he listened to it, like, I think during my meeting with my team, and, like, toward the end, I already got a text back, and he was just like, I love it. I'm in. And I was like, let's go.
Nice. Cool.
It was so cool. And so we rearranged it because it didn't make sense. Like, I wanted it to be very evenly keeled, and to start with the chorus was kind of weird to have, you know, we needed an extra verse, and to do chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus is like...
A lot.
No, yeah. No bueno. So I was like, okay, intro, let's get an intro going and let's get this verse going. And he came in, we scheduled up a co-write to write his verse because I wanted him to have like his own verse that was like very him. And he came in so professional, so prepared. He already had like a full draft of nice. Like an already very good verse. So literally I was like, well, dude, like let's just let like my job then is just to help. Let's elevate. And then we can track like today. And we did. So we finished the verse and I got him on the mic and we just got everything done, you know, and he took a whole chorus and that's what I wanted it to be like exactly even keeled. Right. Like Corey verse chorus, Jack verse chorus, bridge switching off, chorus switching off. Like this very like it's two artists doing a collab. And that's what it became. And it feels so right. And he's like the perfect artist to have on this song. Like, so it's so, it really was in a very long-winded way for me, it was a very quick and cohesive process, you know?
That's awesome. If I'm misrepresenting this, shut me down. But what I've heard so much of too, and I'll pay this off in just a second, is a lot of the pop world is like, how many songs can you write? Like go, 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 go. And in Nashville, I just interviewed Anastasia Elliott and her thing was like,
love Anastasia. Oh,
she's so, dude, her yes. record, new record I've been yes. joining to.
Love. Yes.
On repeat.
Yes.
And she noted the reason she preferred Nashville to LA was Nashville. She's like, let's make the one song great. Like this week versus can we write five songs Monday through Friday?
It's so funny because yes, in our genres, but not in country. So I did an internship at a very, very big at Seagale, which is like a huge publishing company in country in Nashville. It is a machine.
Yeah, turn them in.
Oh, yeah, it's a machine. I mean, my job was to collect the songs, make sure that the lyric had words spelled correctly and, you know, looked good and get in. It was to manage the catalog, to put in the catalog and make sure like everything looked good and sounded good and whatever. I mean, every day, all of the writers turned in a song Sometimes two. Right?
Yeah, which is
crazy. Yeah, I mean, some writers would have an 11 a.m. and a 2 p.m. session. Crazy stuff. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I'm curious then, because it seems like you've got the marriage of this, which is you're releasing songs every 2 weeks, so clearly you've got to have a huge catalog you're sitting on. But how much of that pop world, well, and I guess as you just mentioned, some of that country world, like how much of it is you just have a back catalog, and how much is like, hey, I'm just creating all the time, so let's just keep it rolling.
It's a mixture. One is I have a back catalog because I have one because I keep creating. Right. So the 2 a week incepted from I was looking at my catalog. I genuinely liked a lot of the songs. And I am someone, I create, I mean, there's the business necessity to create, but I don't create because of that necessity. I create because if I lived in Antarctica, I would still be writing music, because that's literally my way of figuring out my own emotional landscape and grounding myself, so I can be a good friend, I can be a good fiance to my fiance, I can be a good whatever. I can, like, if I don't do that, and you can tell if you know me and I haven't written in a while, I get on edge, I get angry.
Same.
It's bad. It's bad. I because I'm not regulated. I'm not regulating. So that all being said, I do create all the time. Mostly to regulate. But then that turns into I do it all the time to regulate. But again, I also have days where I don't feel like doing it and I still show up to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I don't just create because I feel like it. Like, I mean, there are plenty of days I don't feel like it. I'm still going to sit at the desk, see what happens.
Yeah.
Right? It's my job. Right? It's like you do it. You show up. Show up. See what happens. Right? Don't force it. Sit down, start playing some stuff. Usually you'll be like, oh, actually, that was kind of cool. Then you start getting into it. That all being said, the 2 week, I was like, if I don't release these, fast, they're never going to get released, because I'm just going to keep writing and I'm just going to keep creating, and I'm going to get to a point where I'm going to fall. You know, the adage is this: if you ask a songwriter what their most famous, what their favorite song is, it is the last one they wrote.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's
yep,
like,
yep, yep.
That is the thing. I mean, I'm prone to that. So I'm like, let's get these out. I'm also like a newer artist. I'm saying newer because, like, publicly facing, I'm like a newer artist. So I was like, okay, well, and I also, this will get me a catalog just out, you know? So when a song does really well, there's actually, you can, when a song does really well, that would probably be the Fallen Like, I would call it the Fallen Like With Me song, right? The songs that everyone can listen to, they're very listenable, they're comfortable. Fallen Like. And then you have that artist song that's like maybe really heavy. Maybe it could be a ballad, it could be something. But that's the one that the 5% of the people who listen to Fallen Like With Me song that do the catalog deep dive because they're just obsessed with you, they find that song. And they go, okay, I love this artist. This is one of my favorite artists. I'm, you know, like, All Time Low is my Fallen Like With Me song with John Bellion, you know? And then I hear Human by John Bellion, and I was like, okay, no, I love this artist. Yeah. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I actually love this artist, right? Like, so that's like the businessy explanation to it. But I also knew that they would never come out if I didn't release them. And, you know, that was, again, very long-winded. Sorry, that's how my brain works.
No. That's what you're here for. And one of the big questions I like to ask people really is, like, why do you make music? And I think you kind of touched on that. If there's anything you want to add, I mean, that's how I like to kind of close it. Go like, hey, just tell me why you make it. And I think, if I'm hearing you correctly, it was, I felt that in my soul, because that's, I process the world through writing. And that's kind of like what it sounded like. You're saying you regulate through it. But I guess with that question being on the nose to you now, I guess, why do you make music then?
Yeah, it is to regulate, ultimately. It is the only, so my dad, so maybe crassly but truthfully said. And my dad, just quick side note, actually quick side note, I promise.
No, you're good. Yeah, yeah.
You know, was in a signed duo in the 80s, and then was like the rock. I'm from Philly. Was the rock producer in Philly for hair metal. He did A Long Cold Winter. He did like Catch Me I'm Falling, which is like a British single that did really super well back in the 80s. Like, very, you know, he has a really cool career behind him. And he would sit down with me when I was a kid, and he would say, "Son, there's only two things." It's like hard to have a straight face. He would sit down and he would say, "Son, there's only two things on this planet that will engage your mind, your body, and your soul in the same direction to its full capacity. The first is making love with a woman, and the second is writing a song."
I mean, the second you said two things, I was like, I know where this is headed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And he's right. Yeah. 100%. So I do it to self-regulate. 100% do it to self-regulate, which was why I started, was my escape. And so I, you know, did it as an escape. Fell in love with the craft of it, like the actual art of crafting and the process, and it kind of just grew from there. So now, obviously, I've made it my career, and I'm continuing to work on that and grow it, which is not easy. But what keeps me in the, like, I mean, you can ask Victoria, who's like my fiance. I go through crises probably once a day. Like, there's a, like, you know, about once a day I hit the what am I doing with my life, right? Like, that's that, right? And then once a day I also feel like I'm like the best ever. It's like crazy.
Yeah,
it's just
highs and lows. It's tough. Yeah,
it's just this, it's the, yeah, I got this, what am I worried about? And then it's like the, what am I doing, like,
yeah.
Crazy. But I needed to breathe, right? You know, and I think artists, again, when I say artists, though, I mean, like, you could be an accountant and be an artist, right? Like, it's, you're an artist if you need to create. I don't, in any way, if you just are like, I need to draw, I need to paint, I need to, you're an artist, right? I need to do yoga. That's an art form. Right? Like, that's a beautiful art form, right? I need to dance. I need to do something like that. Then you're an artist, right? So, I mean, that's definitely why I do music, though. It's kind of an oxygen thing.
You sit in the producer chair, too, so I'm really curious what you hope then people get out of working with you in music.
So as a producer or as a co-writer, what I really try to be is safe, mostly. I think anyone can learn the skill of writing, honestly. Like, if you have the seed of the thing, you can work it and be really good at it, right? It takes a lot of hours, but you can do it. Same with production. You gotta have the seed of the thing. You have the ability to ideate and hear. But if you have that, even a little bit, you can do it. You can become great, honestly. The thing that I think is harder to learn, because I think it's more of a human thing, and like, is being safe. A lot of people I work with, I'm a male, and a lot of people I work with are women, which a lot, like, I think is something that I found interesting, because I look at it and I go, huh, like, wouldn't women kind of find being in a room with a dude unsafe? Like, I'm not unsafe. I'm a good guy. But
right,
just societally speaking, that would be a thing. Mm-hmm. There was one session in particular that I had back in 2016 or 17. My first write with a woman. And she... We chatted, you know, usually the first hour of a session is just getting to know someone. You're just talking. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, and she was like, yeah. And she wanted to write about her experience getting, like raped, like, oof, physically assault, like sexually assaulted. And I think that write lasted about 10 hours, literally. I think it was a 10-hour session.
Oh, wow.
Well, because, you know, there's, that's something I've never, I mean, thankfully, I've never experienced. And a lot of that was like, okay, you know, your job as a co-writer, right, is your, I mean, especially with a topic like that, you know, sometimes the topic is just like, let's party all night. That's different. You know, but like
right,
with a topic right. like that, you know, you really have to, you need to, you have to create a safe space and you have to create that. You have to like sit in that, right? Like mm-hmm. you hear that and you go, what? And it's not, wow, I'm now going to numb to it because you're about to right. write for like with that person. So it's not like if that happened in my day and I was busy. And it's a stranger, and they said that you kind of have to be numb to it because you can't function.
Mm-hmm.
But in that setting, it's like I can't. It's not my role here to honor her and to honor this is to not be the opposite of numb to it, to lean into it. And so it was a lot of time being spent crying, which we both did, talking about it more. And figuring and like really just like asking questions and like getting into like, okay, like how I can understand it maybe at tops 2% what it actually feels like. Right. But like,
right.
help me get to that 2%.
Yeah.
Right. Like help me get as much as I possibly can. Let's do this. And I say that because I think the most important thing I would say I add is that comfort is that, you know, hey, we're gonna, like, it is important to me that I'm honoring you, right? You're the, like, if you're the artist, now I'm saying artist as in, like, career, you've chosen to be an artist. And right now I am the co-writer to your artist project. My job is to, it's not just to write a good song, right? That's a given. We're gonna write a great song. It's not just to write a song that I think will do well. It doesn't matter what I think will do well because I'm not a listener. Like, I'm not a million listeners. So all I can do, really, I already know my craft really well. So it's and they do too. So it's just like my job is how do I honor you? How do I honor your soul? How do I make sure that what we're writing and every word we're writing is something that you would say?
Mm,
and let's make it yeah. you. You say, you know, you say you love Olivia Rodrigo. That's dope. The world already has an Olivia Rodrigo, right? There's already one Olivia Rodrigo, but guess what? There's also only one of you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find that. Let's find the one you, right? The most, let's get you. Let's figure that out. Let's honor that. But that takes a lot of, to allow space for an artist to not feel like they have to copy an already successful artist, right? To actually be confident and safe and secure enough to try to be themselves, really, actually, which to them will probably feel experimental, where it to them will
yeah,
feel dangerous.
That's gonna be true vulnerability, and then making it, yeah, yeah and then bringing that to life.
Yeah,
not just,
even,
it's, yeah.
I was gonna say, like, even if it's not that heavy, like, that's the heaviest thing I've ever written.
Right.
I remember that because it was so heavy. And it was a very special eye-opening, like, it was that was the right where I was like, I'm doing this for the rest of my life. This is important work. That was like, everyone has that session. That was that session for me. But even if the session is we're going to party all night, that's sick. Well, there's still vulnerability, cuz how do you party all night? Like,
yeah.
and I know that sounds dumb, but for real,
no,
like,
it's real though. Yeah,
you know,
cuz people can hear that. Like, you hear a great song, you can, like, the general listener and the general populace can pick up on inauthentic work.
100%. You know, Kesha is partying different than Pitbull. And then sometimes they party together, but it's
yeah.
different, you know, like it. And I guess my point being, and again, very long-windedly said, is just that I really try to create a safe environment and, you know, really serve. Just like allow the artist to feel that they can try new things, that they can, you know, I can push them. Like, maybe they haven't sung like, but I feel like kind of like the detuned thing. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I feel so many lies. I don't even know. You know what I mean? Like that kind of detuned thing. Like maybe they've only just sung pretty pop songs, but maybe they kind of have like an edge to them and they're scared. Even if this session were not, you're not going to cut that song. Maybe the point of that session is just to get you to do that and experience that side of yourself, that side of your artistry that you're going to go, that's it. That's the direction. That's a whole nother facet of my artist now. It's cool. It's really rewarding on that front too, you know?
And I guess to kind of bring it all full circle then, if you had the chance to like, sit down with your 9-year-old self that's about to start jamming on that Yamaha,
yeah,
like yourself here today sitting down, what would you say?
Man, it's going to get way better. And all of the fears that you're experiencing now are super valid and super real. And the vision that those fears are creating in your head are not going to happen. They're not true.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's the anxiety is simply a misuse of the imagination.
Oh, that's a bar. I had not heard that, but I really like that.
Yeah,
this has been a week of great lines in my like from different pockets of life. That, ooh, that's a really good one.
There you go. Good. I'm glad I can provide.
Yeah. Dang.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's not my quote. I'm just quoting someone else, but
you delivered it. In my mind, it's very attributed to you.
In your mind, it's from Corey. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh man.
This has been so unbelievably fun and insightful. Thank you so much for taking your Friday evening.
Thank you.
Most importantly, you've got so much stuff coming out. Where can people follow along? Where can they find you and get your tunes?
Yes, you can follow me on primarily Instagram and TikTok at Corey Shore, Corey with a K, Shore like the ocean. That is Corey with a K and Shore like the ocean. Corey Shore. And I can spell it too if you need to chop it. So Corey Shore is KORYSHORE. And I have a song coming out this Friday the 13th, with an amazing, really good, very talented friend of mine, Jack the Underdog. It is called Daisies. It is dropping at midnight on Friday the 13th. I will see you guys on the internet when it drops. It's going to be such a good, good time. And I hope to hear your thoughts on the song. I'm very excited.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Dude, thank you so much.
Shouts out to Corey Shore for being on Made for Music. Be sure to follow him on Instagram and TikTok at Corey Shore. That's KORYSHORE. And be the first to stream Daisies, his collaboration with Jack the Underdog, dropping this Friday, October 13th, 2023. And if you dig what you hear on the podcast, brought to you by Stitch Records, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate the extra effort, and I will see you next time.